This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. Thrilled today to be joined by a leader in behavioral health. We've got Josh Cutler with us. Josh is a licensed clinical social worker. He's been involved with the Providence system for a very long time. He's got a terrific reputation. He's going to talk to us today about advice for leaders trying to deal with behavioral and mental health issues, how critical the issues of mental health are, about a new book he's authored, and a lot more. Josh, can you take a moment and introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about the book that you've authored?
Yeah. Well, thanks for that kind introduction, Scott. I've been working in the mental health field for almost 20 years. I've been working in healthcare in a variety of ways, but my focus has really been mental health, working both in private practice, group practice, and then over the last 5+ years working in big healthcare and getting the sense of what it's like to try to integrate behavioral health into a big health system. And I really started this journey because of some pretty significant personal experiences with mental health, both in my family and I had my own experience with depression. And so I have never really been real open about that professionally. And I got to a point where a couple of years ago, I actually had a little bit of a breakdown, and I went to a psychiatric day hospital myself and had a really good experience, really led to a positive recovery, and was able to get back to work and really actually create some amazing programs that I think partly I was able to do because of that experience of going through that recovery journey myself. And so I wrote a book about it that reflects on my personal experiences as a mental health patient, but also kind of talks a bit about my experience working as a professional in the field and some of my thoughts on how things could, you know, possibly improve. I think anybody that's anywhere near healthcare, and especially behavioral health, knows we have a long way to go.
And talk about really first the name of the book, title of the book, so that people want, I want to make sure we capture that. So in case anybody wants to buy the book or read the book, they can do so. What's the name of the book? And then we'll talk about how things can be improved.
Yeah. So the book is called The Day Hospital, a memoir, and you can get it on Amazon. There's more information on my website, joshcutler.net. I have a couple of editions. The first edition I actually published anonymously because I was not quite ready to be totally out there with my name on it. But then recently I did, I found it was really hard to promote an anonymous book. And I got to the point where I just had too many colleagues struggling with mental health issues. And I was working really closely with leaders in the health system on suicide prevention. And we continue to lose doctors to suicide. And it's just, that's another epidemic we don't really talk about much. And I got to the point where it's like, how am I keeping this story under wraps so much? I need to be a little bit more open about this, especially as somebody who's had experiences being pretty successful in creating some, you know, really positive programs and has a good reputation as a leader in the health system to be able to say, you know, hey, I got issues too. It's okay to not be okay.
But isn't that indicative of the mental challenges and the stigma that can still be attached to it, even though less and less so, that when you originally published the book, you published it anonymously because, look, a lot of your colleagues probably didn't know that you spent time in a psychiatric day hospital and you weren't ready to tell them, or patients didn't know. Mm-hmm. But isn't that a fascinating statement itself, that originally published it anonymously and then sort of came out with it more fully a few years later? I mean, that's a fascinating story in and of itself.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely reflective of where we're at. And I've found, though, being more vulnerable myself, that it's led to more deep discussions with colleagues and friends of mine that didn't know I had gone through this stuff and then are able to disclose, you know, I've actually been through some stuff myself. And many of us get into healthcare because we had something tough happen and we want to make things better. And we don't often talk about that. And so I'm excited to be kind of starting that conversation, at least with the people in my orbit.
And it must be fascinating to you, because when you do disclose that you've been through some kind of troubled situation, some kind of challenge, people find you much more approachable to talk about their own challenges, because now you don't feel like, oh, my God, there's that person who's got this perfect life who I can't talk to or he would never understand, all of a sudden you're very vulnerable and people are very comfortable and drawn to that, aren't they?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think when I definitely spent a long time and a lot of energy kind of hiding this side of my life experience. And now feeling a bit more open about it, it's lightened me up and also definitely made me more approachable. I mean, this stuff is so common, whether it's someone's going through it themselves or they have a family member going through it. And to be able to make a real connection around that is great.
And take a moment on what can be done to improve mental health and how health systems deal with mental health. What advice do you give to healthcare leaders?
So, one, it really needs to be a critical part, an integral part of the strategy and operation of your system. I have an amazing psychiatrist leader I used to work with who would call behavioral health, pardon my French, but the bastard stepchild of healthcare. And it can't be that way anymore. If we're really serious about doing value-based care and taking really good care of our patients and our staff, we've really got to make trauma-informed behavioral health care central to everything that we're doing. And there's so many ways that, for example, depression leads to people's diabetes being worse or not taking as good a care, of themselves after they have a heart attack. I mean, the cardiologists in the health system were asking for more behavioral health support in their clinics because these issues are coming up so much. And then I would also say normalizing health seeking behavior among your staff, which can start with talking a bit about in meetings about some of the employee assistance program resources or the mental health resources you have. If you're comfortable talking about your own journey, you don't have to like write a book that goes into as much detail as I gave, but just even hinting like, hey, I'm a human being. I understand some of these issues. I really encourage you to get help. I got help from calling EAP once, and I encourage you to do it too. I think leaders just normalizing that help seeking is so important because so often people are just so ashamed of, I've got to have a perfect face at work and I don't want work to know that I sought help. And if you're working in healthcare, often you go there because of the good benefits and some of those things are available to you. And then as far as leaders, specifically personally, I would say take care of your own mental health. So often people can get so focused on career and the taking care of the people around them and all of the really significant demands of a leadership career in healthcare, that your own mental health can suffer and your relationships can suffer. And so when you're looking at kind of taking a measure of how successful you are and if you're meeting your goals, I would include taking a look at where you're at with your health and look at where you're at with your connection with your family and your colleagues. It can't just be about, we hit these big strategic goals or our key performance indicators. It needs to be more holistic and making sure that you're taking care of yourself so that you can be there, in the long run. I'm certainly aware of a lot of people in healthcare right now that are moving around or retiring, and we need my kids need a healthcare system to care for them and hopefully my grandchildren one day. And to do that, we need strong leaders who are going to be sustaining themselves for the long run.
In this mental health, it's not a one-time thing. This is a constant minding and journey. It's almost like taking care of your physical health. It's a constant effort, isn't it?
Oh, it is. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it definitely, there needs to be things that you're working into, every day that, and that's why I like to focus on mental health, focus on the positive rather than, there's time, serious mental illness is real, and there's times that we definitely need to address that, but mental health is something that, every day that we can be tending to. And some of the key parts of that are getting some exercise every day, tending to your personal relationships, making sure you're connecting with folks, finding some time to laugh. I'm lately working on my dad jokes with my kids. Also making sure that you're doing some hobbies and other things that you enjoy and finding some satisfaction in your work, even if it's just a few minutes a day on top of a lot of challenging things, making sure to pay attention to the parts of your job that give you some joy and expand on those if you can.
And when you look into 2022, what are you most focused and excited about as you move into this next year?
So I've been working on some really kind of big system-wide projects over the last couple years across the Providence footprint, which spans seven states. And I'm actually shifting my focus in the new year to be a bit more local. I've got a project I'm moving into that's going to be focused on developing some local programs. And I'm really excited to be kind of re-engaging. It was as fun as it was to build telehealth programs in California and Texas and Montana and Oregon and Washington and Alaska. I live in Seattle, and I'm really excited about building some programs to support my own community and working to create things that are going to be sustainable for the long run, just in what's around me. And I think for me also really focusing on my health and my family, acknowledging that change really starts kind of right where we are. And I think that's one big thing that I learned from telehealth, that we can do things on a broad scale, but we need to make sure that we're doing things really effectively, one place at a time as well. And so that's going to be my focus.
And take a moment on the shortages of mental health providers, whether it's at the social work, psychologist, psychiatrist level, tremendous shortages of mental health professionals. How do you address that? Telehealth, I know, helps, making it more efficient helps, but are there ways to start to bridge that gap? Because it seems like there's looming shortages throughout medicine, but particularly in behavioral health. How do you start to bridge those gaps a little bit further too?
Yeah. For one, we need a lot more time to really get into the nitty gritty of it. But the short of it is, for one, I don't think there's as much of a shortage as sometimes is advertised or we think. There's a shortage of people that are willing to work in the conditions that people are expected to work in right now. And I know a lot of colleagues of mine who are very skilled mental health professionals that have either left the field or they won't take insurance, and they're billing, out of network rates. And I understand they need to be compensated well. They're professionals. They need to be able to take care of their families. And this is an industry that has operated in the shadows for so long that I think payers were able to get away with, underpaying folks because people weren't complaining about, hey, my behavioral health benefits aren't good. And actually more and more unions and other folks are starting to talk about, this could be better. So I think that's one piece of it. And then the other piece is certainly creating more training opportunities in environments that are going to be really rich with really solid clinicians. So making sure to train them and hold on to them. I in my time at Providence, I worked with some of the best people in the country who are definitely experts on whether it was telehealth or primary care behavioral health, and making sure to spread that knowledge and then provide the resources to make sure that those programs are sustained in the long run and that we can attract and retain the right talent. Because often, I think too often we lose people to, other parts of the system are just going off on their own because it doesn't work for them to stay working kind of in big healthcare and under the conditions they're in.
And let me ask you this question about licensed clinical social workers. This is an area that's chronically been underpaid. How does that get addressed? Because that's such a core part of what we can leverage to better improve mental health and behavioral health and attendant bills, mental health. How does that get fixed a little bit? Is that getting better, the pay for social workers? Because this is an area that's been chronically underpaid for an area where people give so much value, get so much value out of it. Is that starting to improve at all or not necessarily?
Yeah, I would say a little bit. And I would say we're in demand. I mean, I get recruited constantly and definitely have my pick of places to go, but typically it's still not for kind of what I know I'm worth at this point. And a licensed clinical social worker, a lot of people don't even understand what we do, but we're really pretty dynamic. We get training in policy, and also we have a lot of clinical skills, are able to move through these systems and support people in a variety of different ways. I worked closely with psychologists who have certainly different training, but depending on how you count the numbers, a licensed clinical social worker may have as much training as they do, and often a similar skill set for the kind of work that we're doing, but yet we're paid a lot less. And Medicare rates right there, I mean, just pay less for psychologists and for clinical social workers than they do for physicians. I think it's around 75%. So like, if we're really serious about improving things, like, we need to definitely improve the compensation so that, you know, people are going to stay in the field. Cause I have a big amount of student loans and I've got a mortgage and I've got kids. And so those are just reality that I need to attend to. And I'm really passionate about making the clinical social work career a more palatable one for folks, because our training often starts with spending a few years with the most traumatized people in our society and getting paid very little to do that. And then being told, well, now you're licensed, good luck, make a career of it. And I think there's a much better way to be creating a career path for folks.
I mean, 100%. Josh, I want to thank you for joining us today. A pleasure to talk to you. Just a fascinating story and journey, and so much advocacy on behalf of mental health, and so, so important. Thank you for taking the time to visit with us today on the Becker Self-Care Podcast. What a pleasure.
Thank you.